Song from a Bonnie Raitt CD. Sat down with the CD, put it on, and then stop it. And listen to it, see what's going on. And play a little more, and stop it. Oh, that's good like that. Ooh. And I do that a lot now. Listen to stuff and learn it right off the CD, off the internet. Classical Turkish music. I'm trying to assimilate in a year the whole of classical Turkish music. Can be done. Assumption is the mother of all fuck-ups.
Thank you.
Everything seemed to go wrong in his life. He had the reverse Midas touch. Everything he touched turned to shit. Poor man. It was so awful. Something came up. I was playing with Y Cooter. And I told him a story about this guy. Poor man. He said, "Oh, that's simple. That's just a self meat grinder, that's all. That's what he's doing. He's grinding himself on up." A self meat grinder? Oh yeah, that's where you grind yourself up. I can't let this go, I'm sorry. I have to have a song about this. I wrote this song, my daughter contributed some verses to it. It's called the Meat Grinder Blues. Thank you. bullshit. It only makes me mad. Gonna take my television and throw it into the trash. Cause this kind of shit is giving me a rash. It's so hard to learn, so easy to lose. God is playing with a full deck, but it's supposed to be the twos. It's that same old PC number. Is that you? It's a meat grinder. That's right. Walk right over there. That's right. You see that ladder there on the side? That's right. You climb on up the ladder. That's right. Just like that. All the way to the top. Yeah, I know it looks like a big cement mixer, but that's all right. This is self-meat grinder. We're getting ready to grind yourself. All the way to the top. Okay, now turn around, hang on to the handrails. That's right. Now drop on down inside. Okay, I heard you land. You made it. Good. Now you'll see over there on the side of the thing, there's this great big handle. I want you to grab a hold of that handle now. Come on. Grab a hold of the handle with both hands. Now grind yourself. Grind yourself on up. Come on, grind yourself. There you go. Oh man, you should see what it looks like out here. Production is out. We're gonna have to get some more intestinal sacs so we can make some more bratwurst. Because that's what it looks like. You look like bratwurst. That's good. Now keep on grinding now. Don't stop. Oh, man. I told you to take your watch off. Take out your cell phone. We don't want that in there at all. And there it is, all ground up with the rest of you. Mm-hmm. Keep on grinding. That's good. Pass the mustard. Because of a lot of reasons, but it's, you know, putting labels on stuff. I mean, we should be able to know what we're eating and all that stuff. Too. Yeah. It's so sweet. It really is. It's a basic thing. It's freedom of the press. Freedom of the press is the right to be told the truth. That's included in there, so that goes without saying. So these guys spend all this money. They spend all this money making sure that we don't know what we're eating.
Yeah.
That pissed me off. That made me want to go to the loading mix. I don't like to get that pissed off. That was really pissed off. Biblical pissed off. Thank you.
Let a man still the water to be spent forevermore. But it never be to land on that golden shore. That thing by night, we'll haunt his heart. And his only memory lost in the dark.
sometimes I get confused. I can't decide which one to play.
You should see my house. A very sick person lives there. Yeah, I started collecting instruments when I was 17, and I'm 70 now. You should be a fire. You should be going, oh. Yeah, it's like a bunch of electric guitars all different pieces and shit, and pickups, drawers full of pickups and all that stuff. It's called a choirosis. Me and Jackson Brown were discussing that as we were discussing selling old Stratocaster or two, you know. This is before they went up to like $80,000 each. So he got rid of some guitars. I got rid of some guitars too. And then they started going up. I was like, fuck. What did I do? It's a retirement. So. In my headphones. That was scary, Joseph. I really was. Hey, Dave, shut the lid to the oud case so people can see.
Am I being good?
I thought it was God. I really did. Be a Warren Zevon song. This is one of his greatest songs. He's written a lot of them. Very good. Not like this. This one really hit home. I'm not sure when he wrote it, but it sure applied. He would talk about this. The song is called Beneath the Vast Indifference of Heaven, with the title alone, is enough. He thought about that a lot, you know. It's like, so we don't know shit. We have no idea what's going on. We have just been guessing. I remember he was real emphatic about that. Just been guessing, that's all. Good guesses, though. They did some real good ones. They help us out a lot. Because we need it. We really do. He said, "It's just guessing, that's all."
Back into the sea.
And the pig head snaps off him. Life is then no good. Feels really good doing that here. You have the smell of this Kentucky flower. Okay. Yeah, you have the smell of these flowers, and you play that seven. It's like, oh, it's like a glass of warm milk. Oh, good. It gets all good. This is a very wonderful song written by my friend Danny O'Keefe, who is a fabulous songwriter, fabulous singer, and a very strange person. Yeah, Danny is like, well, this is a song about a roundabout perspective of the love affair between Adolf Hitler and Eva Braun. Yet he's comparing it to a relationship that he is presently in. Which is really, there's a lot of layers there. That's a great lasagna of meaning right there for him. So I had him, I said, what is this song about? He told me once, and it was really disturbing. It was so disturbing. But the only way to express such a thing, oh my God, I just got some bad pictures. I need some water. Yeah, you can use this again. This is good. Well, he was making love. up to this girl and supposedly, I think it's a story about someone else, but he said it was hanging over the end of the bed. He was looking at the television. This is in Germany, and there was on the television was the bombing of London, the Stuka dive bombers and all that. And here was this girl with black fingernails and peroxide hair. And I know who it's about. So. He likes to put himself in other people's places. This is really a wonderful way to write. Zevon used to do that a lot. I've had a great time in the studio with a lot of different people, and I've had the pleasure and honor of recording with lots of people. And one of my favorite people to have recorded with is Dolly Parton. I was in my late 30s. I went into the studio with Dolly Parton for the first time. And it was just Dolly Parton and me in the studio. That's scary enough. And I felt like a little boy. I really did. I felt like insignificant little upstart little boy. California kid who kind of played around with the banjo and the fiddle and all that stuff. And I asked her, I said, why, with all the great fiddle players in Tennessee and Kentucky and all the people that you know, these great players, well, why would you have me play? And she said, well, only because you play like an old man. In my late 30s. She said, don't get me wrong, you don't play country music, you don't play bluegrass or violin, it's kind of Irish kind of thing, but you play like a mountain fiddle, you play the mountain music. And I said, yeah, that's what I listened to when I was growing up and learning how to play the fiddle. I listened to those fiddles. And she said, well, that's a good thing you did. I also got to play on Dolly Parton Live at Dollywood, and she introduced the band. This is on stage, her up in the front. She had people come up and do duets with her and accompany her on, kind of cut down versions of the band. It was a big band. It was like 20-some people there on stage with her. In a semicircle, Irish band, and some of these great musicians. Alison Krauss, who played the fiddle, and also sang two-part harmony with Dolly Parton. It was a cosmic event. The clouds parted. Oh man, was that something else? It was so good. But it was the introductions that she did. Introduced everybody in the band, introduced the Irish band, all-time fabulous musician. She said, we had people flying from all over the world, flying from Ireland, flew from England, from Austin, Texas. This was being recorded in Tennessee. We had people flying from New York City, from L.A. David Lindley flew in from Mars. I said, what? Well, you see, I was dressed then as I am now. And this was in Pigeon Forge, Tennessee. And I had asked her before the show. I said, Dolly, do you want me to wear a polyester, the full-on thing? She says, well, I don't want to be the only one. Put it all on. So I did, and I went out there. It was really fun. It was really fun. I got to play some auto harp and dulcimer and kind of odd instruments that I don't play all the time. But it was really fun. But that first time in the studio, she decided she wanted to do an unaccompanied ballad, murder ballad, very old traditional form. She says, I'm thinking of doing Matty Groves, like a great version of it, if you'd like to hear it. I said, of course I would. So I sat there in that chair about the level that I am now, and she was sitting up on the stool, about like that. So I looked up, I would look up at her like that. One of the most beautiful human beings on the face of the earth. And you're looking up at her, and she's got all that blonde hair and all that. And she did, it was impressive. I was impressed. And she started singing this song with all these grisly verses. It's really a gory song. It's a disturbing song. Adding to being disturbed about that, she spoke and sang with the same accent that my grandmother spoke with. My grandmother was from Murfreesboro, Tennessee. And to hear my grandmother's voice come out of Dolly Parton was an event. A memorable event. So, and I'm looking at her, and all these words are going over my head. The goriest shit you ever heard in your life. It was the, oh man, you know. He cut off her head and kicked it against the wall, and I was like, oh. So, but all the meaning of those words is going right on by me. I'm just looking at her and listening to the sound of her voice. It's so wonderful. And in that particular traditional style, it's all very highly decorated. When you sing on a country, you want it to be a certain way. It's kind of like the old Irish and English singing, and there's some other stuff in there too. So she said, how do you like that? I said, that's fabulous. She said, you know some of those songs. I know you know some of those songs. I said, one of my favorites is Pretty Polly, but I never liked the way it ended. So he said, well, just go ahead and change it. That's what everybody does in the mountains. Just make it your own. People sing the same song in one valley, go over another valley, it's a completely different thing because people have put other words to it before radio and television. Nobody could afford a radio anyway, so just entertain themselves. So I changed it around. I changed Pretty Polly around to another version. Based on a kung fu movie I like very much. Thank you.
Pretty Polly, Pretty Polly, yonder she stands. Polly, Pretty Polly, yonder she stands. With her raven black hair and her lily white hand. Willie Cole and Pitty Pound, all the livelong day. He called and Pitty Pound, all the livelong night. And he left her all alone before the morning said there's no time to talk, and there's no time to stand. There's no time to talk, and there's no time to stand. He drew out his dagger, all with his right hand. She pulled out her razor in the blink of an eye. She pulled out her razor in the blink of an eye. She said, "No, my poor Willie, it's you who must die." With a motion so quick that no shadow was made. A motion so quick that no shadow was made. She cut it into air with the flash of her blade.
Thank you.
so yes, my name is Lee. I voted in the city in the first degree. The degree you said in me. If you got anything to do, it's home to me. This instrument is called an oud, O-U-D, or U-D, and this is a Turkish oud. This is one of the smaller versions of the instrument. In Syria, it's a little bit bigger, and the neck is a little bit longer. In Iraq, they have it with much longer neck and a way bigger body. In Egypt, it's about the same, real long. Much longer neck and big body. This one particular instrument was designed and made by a vegan Nigerian who makes these things, makes a lot of them and sends them all over the world. This is an instrument designed to be plugged into a Marshall stack or a twin reverb and turned up to 10. One of the reasons being that oud players have always been fighting with drummers. And sometimes with knives, broken bottles. And this is the answer to that. And it sounds very much like the acoustic version of the instrument. And it's an amazing, amazing sound. You should hear this thing plugged into a little amp with a 112-inch speaker. Deluxe, Fender Deluxe, is the most frightening sound I've ever heard in my life. It's a nasty, nasty, nasty sound. Make you want to go drink the dishwater. It's so good. So very good. Now he made me an acoustic instrument that's probably one of the best instruments I've ever played. And he does that too, but these things, I'm trying to talk him into making one where it would be blue. You know what I mean? You know, like electric blue, like a ZB pedal steel, you know? Electric blue, and you would have, the bridge would be made out of some white kind of plastic. And then you have these, you have this. This would be sparkle drum stuff. For a sparkle pick guard, you have your white things on. You have all this stuff. All the binding would be like white sparkle. And the fingerboard would be white sparkle. That's pretty good, isn't that? So you can make that out of holly or something, some white wood, and then stain it blue. That maximum Paris blue, and then finish it on over. And all the binding would be with that white sparkle stuff. And then you'd put
like Pedro. You think that would be good?
Yeah.
Okay, I'm off telling. That's what I want to do. We've tried to improve on this pig head too. See how that pig head's turned like that? We tried to straighten it out and make it like a 12-string guitar, and like that, it sounded like shit. Awful. Musically unrewarding. I'd like to do a request.
Brother John Norman.
Not good. No, I should have said this is a request I already had. I'm fulfilling this request. His eyes lit up all blue, and drool came out of his mouth. Went right into the pickup of the guitar, and the blue sparks traveled up to all his fillings, every one of them. Thank you so much. Cheeky torches and crying light, full of girls at the bar. All the guys from the office are throwing up in their cars. Get to cooking a roast pig like it's done in the book. Say hello to your sweetie with a casual look. Standing round and poolside, talking shop with the boss. If you are a cool talker, you'll get your message across. Holding drinks in a coaster, standing round in our shorts. Standing talk to a boaster about professional sports. Swinging youth and eating meals is all within the norm. Put away the axes and pay those taxes. That's all that normal at the new one. Everybody, drinking torches at twilight. Who the girls at the bar. All the guys from the office are throwing up in their cars. Get
get to cooking up roast pig like it's done in the book. Stand and talk to a rooster about professional food. Singing you and eating is his own. A million more. Put away the action and pay those taxes. That's all getting normal at the new world. You sing it, keep your voice, you say. Oh, yeah. Get to cooking a roast pig. Like it's done in the book. Say hello to your sweetie.
Say hello to your sweetie.
With a casual look. Swinging you and eating meals is on within the norm. Put away the actors and pay those taxes. Take a doctor's and twilight. Hear the girls at the bar. All the guys from the office are throwing up in their cars. Are throwing up in their cars. Keep singing that. Throwing up in their cars. Are throwing up in their cars. Everybody sing that. Are throwing up in their cars. Oh, dude. Oh, man. Oh, no. Oh, no. This is a brand new Mercedes, dude. You threw up into the air conditioner. Oh, no. Now I can't see out the windshield. Oh, man. What did you eat? Holy shit. Oh, no, man, I can see it. Oh, God. Dice carriers. Oh, no. Looks like there's a lot of beer in there. Man, this is awful. There it is. The inevitable. Whether you've been eating it or not, there's one thing that's always there. When you have to throw up corn. That's right. The other thing that's always there, tomato skin. That's right. Throwing up a necker. Throwing up a necker. Throwing up a necker. Keep singing that. Throwing up a necker. Biggest mystery of all. There's no explanation for it. No one has ever found out. The biggest mystery of all is that single, solitary peanut. You don't remember when you ate them either. It's been down in there real long. It's grown some kind of fur. And it's sticking to the glass. Oh, really bad. Now it's starting to smell. In my brand new Mercedes. Right up in that car. This actually happened. Oh, right up in that car. Thank you so much. Thank you very much. Haven't done that song in a while. It's good.
No, no, that song is too much fun. And you know what happens when you have too much fun. You're punished for it. And it's an old thing. And my wife talks about it. You know, she says, "Oh, that's so Catholic. I was raised Catholic, so that's where a lot of that stuff comes." You know, you have too much fun, you're punished for it afterwards. It's logical. A logical thing. So me and Wally Ingram, I was on the road for years and years with Wally Ingram, fabulous drummer, one of the best, absolutely. And we came up with the Lindley Ingram postulate. And it is, if you have too much fun, you will be punished. And if you have something horrible happen to you, and you haven't been having fun, what's happening is that you're being pre-punished for fun you will have in the future. Test it out. You think I'm kidding. It really is a thing. I'm writing a book. It's called The Book of Dave. And it's taking on a couple of different aspects that I never thought it would. That's in there. There's a bunch of other things too. I like to do the old tune I used to do years and years ago. I used to play at Disneyland. Play in front of the Mine Train. That's where I learned to drink. People when I went to Disneyland. Met Walt Disney. He's about 7 feet tall. Mrs. Disney, who's about a foot and a half shorter than him, loved the band I was playing, Mad Mountain Ramblers. And we played out in front of the Mine Train. We would take our breaks in back of Casa de Frijos. And that's where all the drinking took place. Lots of vodka. It was very cold when we played there because it was for graduation. Grad night, it was called. We had made $19.95 for 5 hours' work. 5 cents. On time. With breaks in between. So breaks in between that were the problem. And to this day, I cannot disassociate the taste of Fritos from the taste and smell of vodka. We got put on report a lot. One of the great people I met, his name was Johnny St. Cyr. Johnny St. Cyr played with Louis Armstrong way back in the old days when he was first starting out. Johnny St. Cyr invented the guitar banjo. He put the first guitar neck on a banjo body because he didn't know how to play the four-string banjo at all, the tenor or the plectrum banjo or the five-string. So in order to get this job, he took neck off the guitar and had it put on the banjo, went and got the job, and the rest was history. He was in his late 80s when I met him. The dressing room was up above Aunt Jemima's. We had our lockers up there. His band was called the Young Men from New Orleans. They weren't young. They were in their 70s and 80s. And these guys were killers, players. Mike White, Teddy Buckner. And I remember I bought a guitar, classical guitar, brought it down to Disneyland to practice. And I remember Johnny coming in. Says, "Oh, that's a nice guitar. Wow, a real Spanish classical. Mind if I try it out?" I handed it to him. He played the most beautiful stuff you've ever heard. He says, this is a great instrument. What a great instrument. It was just about time to leave. About then, I put the guitar back in the case and put on my jacket. We walked out of the dressing room onto the landing of above Aunt Jemima's, above this steel staircase. It was just starting to become a light. We looked out over Disneyland, out over the fake Mississippi landing, the fake riverboat. And from that angle, you could see all the mechanical stuff under the water. All the rails that everything ran on, all the gears, all that stuff. You could see that. And you could see the smile start on his face. We were looking at that. And just then, the sun starts coming up over the fake Matterhorn. And he looks at that. He just nods his head. He looks over at me and said, "Ain't that something?" I think of him every once in a while. It's one of the tunes I used to play at Disneyland.
Johnson Water went to the city, riding in a Chevrolet. They came out a broken walkman, had no money for to pay their way. Had no money for to pay their way, had no money for to pay their way. Had no money for to pay their way.
It sounds like
Steve Lovey. It's come out half a year, something.
So about those I should have got into. Syriac Aramaic. Steve Lovey.
Steve Lovey, that's enough to get.
I've done that in an airline counter. I've gone up and I started with that. It looks like you're dodging bullets or something like that. Recently, I did a very cruel, horrible thing. I have to tell you guys about it. So I'll feel better. I can sleep a little better at night. I went into the men's room at LAX airport. And I went into one of the stalls in there. And there's an African song I learned from one of my father's records. And I started singing the song. The place was really crowded. So I was singing, Signor, Signor Joena, Signor, Signor Joena, Signor Aye, Ebola Aye, Ebola Aye, Ebola Aye. And that place cleared out. Was able to wash my hands as at a leisurely pace. I may do it on my way back. It's a terrible thing to make fun of, but it's like I saw every minute on the TV when I was watching TV recently. It was just as like it's part of you know, keeping us all agitated, kind of afraid, you know, but a little part. there's that, and then there's this, all this other stuff that's happening. It's like pinpointed. It's okay. You can see somebody going, okay, we want to concentrate on this, because if those people start thinking about Fukushima, the shit will hit the fan, okay? That stuff is totally, totally quieted down. It's like there's a gag order. In fact, there is a gag order in Japan. It says, and it was written down, it's a written law. It says, it is considered an act of terrorism to enforce your opinions upon someone else. Essentially, the gag, the national gag. But we can talk about it here. We don't have that shit to deal with. You know. People in Japan, they can't do that. They're having a tough, tough time. And you don't hear about it. You don't ever hear about it. And I wonder, you know. I think about, should I write? You know, should I email or tweet? Or Twitter or whatever to these TV stations. Should I do that? Is it going to make any difference? Yeah, well, enough people do it. Yeah, we want to hear what's really going on. Thank you so much. And that, I think that would be good to know. Wouldn't you like to know stuff that's really going on? I would. This is our planet here, and to keep all that stuff quiet, that sucks big time. So we can either not do anything about it, or we can email, Twitter, tweet, Japanese government, that would be a good idea, not a radio station, TV station. Don't need to bring it down. But it's time. It really is time. Now, I've seen so much stuff happen in my 7 years. I see all this shit happening. And it scandalizes me. You know how difficult it is to scandalize me?
It takes an awful lot.
Ancestors on both sides of my family, they were all troublemakers. Yeah, hard to believe it.
Oh man.
So part of the thing in my family was that in a certain era in my dad's family, I went back and I checked out ancestors back there at a couple of sites, and then somebody emailed me, a 10th cousin on my mom's side of the family. He says, you should check out your great-great-grandfather back there, and who was adopted and who wasn't adopted. And I went back there, you know, and it said, Isaac Mendel. Never heard that name before. Never heard that name. It was a Jewish name, way back when. And it said in the records in Denver and Boulder, Colorado, that he married an Arapaho woman. No name. He didn't put her name in there. Which I thought was a little odd. I knew it. I fucking knew it. You know? It's an amazing thing to discover that you're in a rabbit hole. I love that so much. Thank you.
come out and sign some CDs for me real quick. Thank you.